Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
If we're being honest, any chef that tells you that they're thinking nutrition first and flavor second is lying to you.
Chef Dave Talent telling it like it is, and he should know about flavor. The Bloomington chef was listed as a semifinalist for the James Beard Awards for the 8th year in a row. He talks us through his beet and goat cheese ravioli. Farmers sharing their data with Big Ag, the pros and cons with Harvest Public Media. A local farm produces gorgeous greens using hydroponics, then Chef Daniel Orr makes kale chips. And The Rail changes its menu every 6 weeks to serve up the most seasonal dishes possible. Chef Bob Adkins gives us the rundown on his curry. Food stamps, organic versus conventional farms, big food going GMO-free, and human waste as a soil amendment. Our news segment this week with Luann Johnson has a little bit of everything.
More than $103 million in SNAP benefits were redeemed last year in military groceries, up almost $5 million from 2012. This is the sixth straight year for increased food stamp usage by military families. The entry-level active-duty military salary is less than $20,000 a year. For a two-person household, this qualifies for SNAP. Food stamp benefits will continue to be cut over the next 10 years as part of the Farm Bill signed into law earlier this year. The Center for Food Safety says that more than 75% of food in the U.S. contains genetically modified ingredients, which means manufacturers who want to go GMO-free are posed with a massive undertaking. It took General Mills the better part of a year to bring their GMO-free version of Cheerios cereal to production. Cheerios are made largely of oats, which are not genetically modified. The issue lies in the sugar and corn used to sweeten the cereal. Once GMO-free varieties are found, ensuring they remain free of contaminants from processing, transporting, and handling all the way to the yellow box means setting up a new system. All of this can get costly. General Mills has said it will absorb the extra cost for now, trusting it will be offset by offering an in-demand product. While many other countries already label GMO products, there is no federal standard for non-GMO labeling in the U.S. The non-GMO project independently verifies if products contain 0.9 or less GMOs. The Environmental Working Group has compiled a shopper's guide to GMO food. Find a link to that at eartheats.org. A spate of incidents has revived old tensions between conventional farmers and sustainability advocates. Late last year, a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation investigation found that nearly half of organic certified produce in Canada over a two-year period contained pesticide residue. Then in January, the country's Food Inspection Agency admitted that it failed to report the violations to groups that certify organic products. Last week in Australia, a state Supreme Court heard arguments in a fight between an organic farmer and his neighbor. The farmer lost his organic certification after genetically modified canola seeds from a conventional farm drifted onto his land and took root. He's suing for losses in a test case that has further galvanized opposing sides in an ongoing debate over the rights and responsibilities of neighboring farmers. In 2010, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack issued an open letter calling for a new paradigm of cooperation and coexistence between organic and GM farmers, and pushed for alternatives to litigation. But organic farmers say the current rules tilt steeply toward farmers who use chemicals and grow GM crops. Mark Smallwood of the Rodale Institute says that aside from relocating, the only defense an organic farmer has against contamination is to coordinate with neighboring conventional farmers, to encourage them to skip spraying on high wind days and to grow thick barriers on the edges of fields. And environmental activists say Americans will have to get over their potty hang-ups in the not-so-distant future. With proper handling, human waste can safely transform into rich soil for gardening or farming, but taboos, stigma, and controversy still linger. With world supplies of drinking water shrinking and waste disposal growing more expensive, people in places like the U.S. and Europe will have to change laws and stop flushing natural fertilizer into water systems. That's the opinion of Joseph Jenkins, author of the Humanure Handbook. Our newsman Chad Bouchard spoke with Jenkins and members of a group that have been building composting toilets in Haiti since 2006. a very interesting read about humanure at eartheats.org.
One of the more thought-provoking stories from our bloggers this year. Also, be sure to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook by searching for Earth Eats. Lou Ann Johnson, great work.
Thanks, Annie.
Just about all of us are struggling with protecting our data online, whether it's what to share on Facebook or how to react to targeted Google ads. Farmers are worried about some of the same issues. They're using precision information from their fields to prescribe exact doses of everything from seeds to water to fertilizer. That farm data could help drive new levels of productivity. But as Harvest Public Media's Grant Gerlach reports, farmers have to decide just how much they want to share.
In Dave Beck's machine shop, you see some of the old tools for farming, wrenches, metal grinders, air compressors. But sitting on a steel slab of a welding table is one of the new tools, a laptop computer loaded with specialized software for precision agriculture. Beck farms about 4,000 acres in eastern Nebraska, and he uses software from John Deere to break each field down into hundreds of grid squares. On that laptop, we look at the planting map for one irrigated field, a bright green circle inside a dark red square.
You can kind of see the two different colors where the pivot corners are a different color.
The map tells the planter to drop more than double the seeds in the green area covered by sprinklers than the red corners where the water doesn't reach.
As soon as it crosses that line, the GPS line, it will slow the planter drives down and thin the population down.
Precision agriculture started with satellite-guided tractors and maps recording grain yields during harvest. But farmers like Beck are taking the next step. Depending on the soil, rainfall, and past yields, they can apply different amounts of seed, water, and fertilizer to the land.
Instead of putting that blanket across the whole field, 200 pounds per acre, we could maybe put 300 pounds on the acres that needed it and zero on some other acres. It's putting the fertilizer where it's needed, which is better for the environment, keeping it out of the water and the rivers.
Now that retailers from Walmart to Whole Foods are putting a critical eye on fertilizer use in food production, it pays for farmers to be precise. But Purdue University agronomist Bruce Erickson says the big payoff is still out there if farmers are willing to embrace big data. Erickson says even with all the precision technology, there's a lot of trial and error on the farm right now. The answers would be clearer if farmers pooled their results.
We mine the information from farmers' fields, sort of like Google mines the information from our mouse clicks, and what Walmart mines from when we purchase certain products, who purchases them and when.
That would be a treasure trove for seed companies. It could help speed up research and establish a track record for new seed varieties.
People are thinking whole farms could be our research plot versus doing a specific study in a corner of a farm.
Farmers could make decisions based on neighbors' real results. You know how Amazon recommends books you might like based on your purchase history? Farmers could tell if people who got great yields with this corn also liked those soybeans.
That's huge. You know, you can see it over multiple soil types and multiple types of operations.
That's Todd Reed. He farms more than 2,000 acres near Lincoln, Nebraska.
You could look at one hybrid over 5,000 acres. There's an extreme amount of value in that.
But this is where the information age gets bogged down in the nitty-gritty. If their data is sold, will farmers get a cut? What if there's a security breach like at Target? Central Nebraska farmers Brandon Honeycutt and Lon Bone say those concerns are enough for many farmers to keep their data between themselves and close advisors.
I think there's a distrust of the major corporations of, okay, what are you going to do with my data?
Someone else is probably profiting from it, and they feel they should share in that.
At this point, digging into data could represent the next big step forward for U.S. agriculture, but only if farmers feel safe taking the plunge. That's why the Farm Bureau, the country's largest farm group, hashed out a new policy for sharing farm data earlier this year. It includes the right for farmers to delete their data whenever they want. As farmers become more comfortable with precision technology, it may only be a matter of time before sharing data becomes second nature. Lon Bone says when it comes to technology, farmers don't like to be left behind.
There's always one farmer in the community who's 20 years behind everybody else, and they don't want to be that guy.
But for now, most farmers are taking a long, hard look before they leap into big data. Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. The James Beard Foundation released its list of semi-finalists for this year's Restaurant and Chef Awards. Think of this like the culinary Oscars. For the eighth year in a row, Bloomington's chef Dave Talent made the cut as a best chef in the Great Lakes region. How do you get to the top of the culinary world? Focus on flavor, sometimes at the detriment of nutrition.
If we're being honest, any chef that tells you that they're thinking nutrition first and flavor second is lying to you, because we're always thinking about how to extract the maximum flavor and give the best taste and the best experience.
He says that's the difference between what people cook at home and what you order at restaurants. Chefs may add a little more salt, sugar, and fat to extract the flavors they want. Which is not to say that Talent adds bacon to every dish just because it tastes good.
Like I keep a squeeze bottle of fresh squeezed lemon juice on my station so that, you know, if I feel like a dish is right, almost right where I want it, instead of maybe adding a little more salt, I'll add a little bit of lemon juice. If the lemon juice puts it where I want it to be, then that's that much salt that I didn't put in.
He's the chef and owner of Restaurant Talent. Every January, they put together an Italian menu. This year, they extended it through most of February because it was just so popular, especially the pasta dish.
We've been doing this beet and goat cheese ravioli that it's the only pasta dish that I have to bring back every single time. So, I mean, it's a lot of people like beets and they have this and they love it. And a lot of people don't think they like beets, and then they have it and they're like, whoa, they're transformed.
He usually sources as many ingredients as possible from local farms. Remember farmer Teresa Bertels from a couple episodes ago? But this winter has been a bear. It's the fewest local offerings he's seen in his 10 years cooking in Bloomington. He needs beets in bulk. But for home cooks, you can still score 5 to 6 beets a week at your local farmer's market. Don't like beets, you say? Talent says prepare them simply and let their natural sweet earthiness come through.
Wash them really well. And then we put a little bit of oil on them and some salt and pepper. And then we'll toss them in the oven, maybe wrap them in some aluminum foil. Toss them in the oven for, if you've got baby beets, maybe an hour, hour and a half, the bigger beets are going to probably take, 2 to 2.5 hours. But you roast them until, just like you would do with a potato, till a knife comes out, easily and clean.
Just let them cool for 5 to 10 minutes, peel them, and serve easy. This preparation is how Talent was introduced to beets for the first time.
I never had beets until I went to culinary school. The first time I had a roasted beet, I was kind of transformed. I was like, okay, beets are really good. I don't understand why my mother never made us beets.
Chef Dave Talent, an 8-time semifinalist for the James Beard Awards. Connect with him at restauranttallent.com. With the help of our bloggers, you can incorporate more beets into your cooking. Recipes for beets and blood orange salad, an open-faced beet and carrot sandwich, and a simple and lovely marinated beet salad. All these recipes are some of the most colorful at eartheats.org. You gotta check them out. Or there's this recipe that could very easily become one of your new favorite condiments. First, getting the freshest ingredients in Chef Daniel Orr's garden.
We're going to pull a few beets. Now, this year we didn't really have great success with our beets, but size doesn't always matter. So we're going to take some of these and we're going to make a beet vinaigrette. So even with just a few little beets, we can make a nice salad dressing or dip, and it's good on all kinds of things. And we even use it at the restaurant as kind of a Jackson Pollock type paint that we paint our plates with. So we put it in squeeze bottles, and we can use that vibrant purple beet vinaigrette, some roasted red peppers, coulis, a little bit of herb oil, basil oil, and we've got this beautiful palette of colors to paint our plates with. So let's go into the kitchen.
Beets, not the prettiest of all foods.
Well, a lot of people don't like beets because they say they taste like dirt. And they do have a very earthy flavor. We're going to trim off the tops. Now, the tops are just as good as the roots, so don't throw those away. A lot of people tend to just discard the tops of the beets, but they're great sautéed. You can make any kind of a stewed greens dish with the beet greens. I've got my beets ready right here. Again, very tender. When I stick the knife into it, it releases. It feels very, very soft. We're just going to peel them. The way we're going to accentuate the flavors of this beet is with some orange, some honey, and some ginger, some of my favorite flavors, and it really kind of rounds off that, what some people call dirty flavor that beets have, and makes them a little more universally loved, should we say. All right, going to just put the blender on. Now you see, it has a nice thick viscosity to it, coats the spoon, that's what you're looking for.
Love it.
Yeah, and this is also great with goat cheese. Put a little bit of this sprinkled on top, drizzled on top, and have a wonderful dressing. You can use it for all kinds of things.
All we're saying, folks, is give beets a chance. I couldn't resist. Coming up.
The best foods, the healthiest foods, are definitely cooked quick, everything intact, and then eaten as quickly as possible.
Chef Bob Atkins practices what he preaches with the curry dish on his new menu at The Rail. He talks about how to make an authentic curry ahead on Earth Eats. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
One of each? Yeah. Is that what you said?
Okay. I'm at the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market again this week. A staple at the market all season has been gorgeous greens, like the lettuce, arugula, and basil at this table.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Deb McKee Kelly, and we're Good Life Farms. Today, we will sell probably about 120 heads of lettuce. Yeah, yeah. Because I brought about 120, and I'll sell out. We grow hydroponically in heated greenhouses. We've been growing hydroponic for almost 4 years now. We started growing in the field, and then we switched to hydroponics a few years later for efficiency and productivity.
Can you just give me a brief explanation of what hydroponic growing is all about?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's just growing in water. You're growing with the roots suspended in water that's infused with nutrients from mineral salts.
And this allows you to grow year-round?
Yes, we grow year-round. Well, the heaters in the greenhouse allow us to grow year-round. I mean, anybody could grow year-round if they heated their greenhouses, so... The nice thing about our hydroponic setup is if it doesn't sell, I can take it back and put it, the roots are still there, I can put it right back in the system. So let it grow for another week.
Good Life Farm is located in Eminence, Indiana. They have a page on their website that outlines how their particular hydroponic setup works. Information and photos at goodlifefarms.com.
Most of the complaints I hear are, I don't like beets.
Seriously, no love for beets out there? Chef Bob Adkins doesn't shy away from including less popular ingredients in his dishes at The Rail. He encourages his guests to step outside their comfort zone, and maybe they'll surprise themselves. Like, hey, maybe someone has never tried a curry before. Adkins is excited to put his first attempt at a curry in front of guests.
Onions and leeks and bell peppers and carrots and celery, kind of your fleshy vegetables. And then toasting your powders, say your cumin powder, or toasting your curry powder, bringing out that flavor. And then using fresh herbs along with that, dill, mint, cilantro, fennel leaves, all go into this paste that I make using a little curry, but also a bunch of ginger, a bunch of garlic.
Then he toasts the curry paste and finishes it with water and coconut milk. There are 11 different veggies in his curry, including potatoes, which are the timer. When the potatoes are tender, then the dish is ready. He and his crew work days ahead, freezing batches of curry to serve throughout the week. But home cooks have it better, he says. If you take the easy route and buy some pre-made curry paste and herb mixtures, you can whip up this dish in the time it takes you to cook the rice. And his philosophy is,
the best foods, the healthiest foods, are definitely cooked quick, everything intact, and then eaten as quickly as possible.
Nothing stays on the menu too long at The Rail. They change things up every 6 to 8 weeks to try to stay as true to the seasonality of foods as possible. That means his creativity is constantly switched on. To make it a bit easier, all the menus have 10 to 12 general categories that the dishes fit into. Think braised, sole, sauté, pasta. That helps focus his imagination.
Say if you're writing a paper or writing a book, something like that, you need to start with an outline and then fit within that. You know, creative power can get out of control just as easily, you know, as any kind of power. So you need to harness that a little bit, I think, when you change as often as we do.
So he's cooking the curry dish now, but he's already looking ahead to early spring and thinking about what foods farmers will be bringing to those first few Saturdays of the market.
Soon it's going to start to warm up and people are going to start to want to eat healthier. They're going to want to be more active. They're going to want to get out. And I'm going to want to eat healthier, and I'm going to want to bring in the fresh stuff, the radishes, the greens, the stuff that's going to be coming up in the markets. And during the market season, that's a huge point of inspiration, is to go there, just browse, even if I don't buy everything I want.
He's talking awfully convincingly about nutrition, isn't he? Press him a little bit, and he does admit that the overall dining experience is what really matters. After all, restaurants, he says, are in the entertainment business.
We want people to come here and enjoy spending their money on something that maybe they can't do at home, or things that they may not indulge in at home, or find time to cook at home. I think those are the dishes where we kind of put nutrition not aside, but we'll add the butter, we'll add the cream, we'll add the rich red meats, things like that.
Adobo roasted lamb ribs and that vegan curry, two highlights of the latest menu at The Rail. If these dishes sound appealing, better get there quick before they swap out the menu for early spring. Thanks to Bob Adkins also for sharing his curry recipe with us. Make it yourself at home. It's posted at eartheats.org. Sticking with this idea of curry, here's a healthy alternative to potato chips using kale.
We've got this beautiful dark purple kale that has this nice kind of almost neon-looking center stem, bright purple. What we're going to do is we're just going to pull the heavy stems out of those and put those to the side. Now, you can put those in your compost. You could chop them up and throw them in a soup. You could braise them with some lentils or something.
Can you pickle them?
These could be pickled, too, yeah. And lots of fiber in those. All right, so I'm going to pull the purple leaves off here first. Then I've got our more traditional green curly kale. And you want to leave the pieces fairly big because we're going to be making kale chips today. And they're a great alternative to potato chips. They're very elegant. You can serve them with cocktails. You could serve them just with any kind of snacks. And then finally, I've got this real long kind of tongue-shaped kale, if you have a real big tongue. And we're going to take this off and leave these in nice long pieces.
The Gene Simmons of kale?
Yeah, exactly.
That's incredible how you're doing that. You're just running your fingers along the stem and the leaves are just coming right off.
Right off, and you leave that whole big stem behind. Okay, and you could make these just plain with just a little touch of olive oil. That's pretty much all you need right there. That would be about for 3 or 4 cups of kale. That would be about a tablespoon of olive oil. And put a pinch of salt. You got to be careful with the salt because these are going to cook down and it's easy to oversalt greens. All right, so it's better to undersalt than to oversalt. A little bit of fresh ground black pepper, and you could do it as simple as that. I'm going to kick it up a little bit with some curry, so a couple good pinches of curry, and a little bit of garlic powder. Okay, and then we just simply kind of massage the oil and seasonings into the kale. So now we're just going to lay these out on a sheet tray with no additional oil. And those long ones you may want to break in a couple pieces, but for presentation you really want some nice big long pieces in there. And you could do the same thing with, if you wanted to, with some collard greens. All right, so now we just put these in a 250 degree oven. It's a nice slow oven. And you cook them for about 25 to 30 minutes. And the magic of radio.
Ta-da!
They come out like this. Okay, and then for presentation, I like to put them in a rocks glass. And so those nice tall ones kind of stick out of there. Put in a couple of the purple ones for color.
You can hear how crunchy they are.
Oh, yeah, they're super crunchy. They're delicious. I love these things. And a great way to and get a little kale into your life.
More kale recipes, lots more. Search the archives at eartheats.org. I want to give a shout out to KSVU Community Radio in Washington State for partnering with Earth Eats. If you want to get local and sustainable food on your public or community radio station, tell them to drop us an email to eartheats@gmail.com. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Bob Adkins, Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Luann Johnson, Deb McKee Kelly, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Dave Talent, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. We're better when you tune in, so thanks. For Earth Eats, I'm Annie Corrigan.